on 1116 SEN. Hungry for sport with Kevin Bartlett. For Prosper, for the money you need for your business, go to prospa.com. And Ferntree Gully Isuzu Ute. Quality vehicles from a quality dealer.
7 past 9, good morning and welcome to the program. It's been a never-ending story, this campaign for the Socceroos to qualify for the World Cup in Russia. And it comes down to our 23rd qualifying game tonight against Honduras. And in recent times, Ange Postecoglou's future as coach has been a talking point just as big as qualifying itself. The World Cup road to glory has been a struggle, and Postecoglou has been lambasted by his critics for not closing out the deal early in the campaign, for Australia should not be in this position tonight. We are a soccer nation that is still growing through the A-League, and it needs the prestige of playing at the World Cup. My observation is, we just can't score if Tim Cahill is not playing or has an off night. Cahill has got us through to this last hurrah with heroics against Syria. So we say to Tim, can you give us one last miracle performance tonight? As for Ange, despite what people say, tonight's result will have a lasting effect on his legacy as coach of the Socceroos. We started this campaign 884 days ago with the slogan, In Ange We Trust. Let's hope it finishes that way. I'm KB. That's my take.
It's very important because you want to be at the biggest tournament in the world. I think it's a reward for, you know, the whole organisation and the players and the staff for all the hard work they've been through. I mean, this has been the longest World Cup campaign taken by any nation, both in, you know, amount of games and kilometres travelled. So you don't want all that to mean nothing. For the game, it's always, you know, it's always important that you're there when the World Cup's played.
Well, there's Ange Postecoglou, the longest campaign of all the teams vying for a spot in Russia in 2018. 9429 1116 is our famous talkback number. Can we pull it off tonight? Can Timmy Cahill, can he pull off another miracle? Are you nervous? 9429 1116 0433 98 1116 if you want to send through an SMS. Coming up, the buzz. Johnny Ralph is going to join us here. All thanks to Eco Garage Doors. Also, we'll catch up with Ian Robson, Melbourne Victory CEO. Rowan Dummett, of course. Golf tip of the week. We can give you a golf lesson on radio and Facebook. And Brian Waldron will join us, taking your calls. Fact or fiction?
Well, I'm a king bee, baby. Want you to be my queen. Together we commit, honey.
On Hungry for Sport, John Ralph.
Get on to Johnny Ralph.
G'day, Buzz.
I feel sick, Kevin. I feel sick to my stomach. I know we're favourites. I know that we should win this game. And you just keep thinking to yourself, though, on a nice pitch, we're going to have a million chances. And there just might be that chance where one of our defenders falls over, or a bad back pass, and they get a single chance, as has happened so often in this qualification period, and they slot it away. Holland and Italy have shown us, haven't they? You don't have a birthright to World Cup qualification.
They've missed out. Netherlands have missed out.
Yep. Yeah.
Chile has missed out.
I suppose the one thing you'd say, though, Kevin, is after 22 games of this marathon qualification period, it doesn't come down to luck. It doesn't come down to the bounce of a ball or a bad penalty shout or a rub of the green. If you play 22 games and you have, by my reckoning, Kevin, 8,742 shots at goal, as we have, and you still get rolled, well, you're just not good enough. And so I think if we do lose today, we can't say, look, it was a tough break against the Honduras. We just weren't bloody good enough. How much have we heard about Rogic? How much have we heard about Tommy Juric? You know, they're the next generation. Robbie Cruz, who will hopefully come back in tonight. We hear so much about this next generation. And yet, when we are winning, it comes down to one bloke, doesn't it? Our Timmy. So let's hope that these blokes can get off his back. And let's hope that he and Aaron Moy can get us to another World Cup. But you'd love to see one of those blokes shine. You'd love to see one of those blokes step up and say, you know what? I'm going to be there as well as Timmy Cahill at a World Cup. And not to suggest we might do any real damage, but we might be able to show that we've got a future without this freakish, extraordinary bloke delivering again.
Well, you just said before that you're very, very nervous tonight. So what's the most nervous you have been for a sporting event? 9429 1116. What's the most nervous you have been for a sporting event? Now, if you've just got in the car or you've just turned on the radio, earlier this morning, Denmark has blown Ireland
out of the water with a 5-1 win to advance to the World Cup, so congratulations to them. Ireland scored the first goal too, so they're on a high. They're on a high, the Irish boys. And then Denmark have slotted home the next 5 goals. Now, Italy, Greece, USA, Netherlands, Ivory Coast, Ireland, Cameroon, all going to be missing from the 2018 World Cup. The big question is, are we going to be there?
Well, you think about it.
The 2018 World Cup. Well, I think it's just in the hands of Tim Cahill. Yeah. I know, because you've got to score. We've got to score. And if not, if you know, it might get down to a shootout like last time. And there goes John Aloisi through the window. He's still, still running as we're speaking. But Tim Cahill is just a miracle man. And he's one of those players that doesn't have to touch the ball much. In fact, he doesn't touch the ball a lot. But he's a finisher. Why is it? I don't need soccer fans to tell us this. Why is it? Is there a finishing school somewhere? Is there a Tim Cahill finishing school, you know, of being a striker? How do you develop a striker? How do you get someone into your side who's just an innate goal scorer in soccer?
Well, I think that's what you said. It's innate. It's not learned. I mean, you know, look at him. What is he, 5'10"? And yet he's got this freakish jumping jack ability to just be in the right position and get vertical and just and kick those goals.
You mentioned to me a few moments ago, just as we come on here, about Indigenous players playing soccer. And you mentioned, you know, like Lionel Messi, that, you know, if you could imagine Ciro Rioli, sort of, you know, that sort of player, zigzags and quick and got great sort of reflexes. But do we not have a lot of Indigenous people playing soccer?
Well, think about the finishers. Think about the blokes in the AFL in the forward half. Those Ciro Rioli types, those Michael Walters types, who are just extraordinary. The lateral movement, the, as you say, the innate, you know, the nous for goal. And I was, I didn't watch a lot of the international rules, but I just was listening to Tommy Wren's call, and he said, look at this bollocks. They just pick up this skill so quickly. And I thought about the player drain that so many of our Indigenous players,
Sean Burgoyne,
you know, go straight to AFL rather than soccer. And I thought about, you know, so few Indigenous players. I looked it up, like Jade North. He's someone who's captained the Socceroos. There's, you know, there's 10 or 12 Indigenous players who've played for the Socceroos, but no one else that I recognised. And so that's fine. That's where the Indigenous players go. But I thought to myself, they're the kind of players who would be the next Tim Cahill. They would be those will-o'-the-wisp strikers. They can just find a yard in the box. And yet we don't seem, you know, I know Tim Cahill is freakish, but we haven't had a great generation of strikers apart from Viduka, have we?
Well, I think with the Indigenous players, they follow their heroes.
Yep.
And their heroes have been Australian rules players.
And maybe the next generation will. They'll find a ball to kick around wherever they are in Australia. But, yeah, that was just one little thing that struck me. And maybe people who would know more about soccer might be able to tell us about the pathway, whether there are Indigenous players who are trying to train up as these kind of guys. Your most nervous moment in sport, Kevin. I couldn't watch the Thailand game when we had all those shots. I had to turn it away for 5 minutes, and I think to myself, surely we've scored. I'd come back, no, still nil all. And finally, we got a couple of goals, of course, and it could have been so much easier. And then against Syria, when we seemed to have won that game, and yet they're only denied by the width of an upright. So, you know, with the away goals rule, Kevin, I know people say that we're favourites, yet it takes, you know, one freak shot, and all of a sudden,
you're making me nervous by talking about Honduras actually scoring a freak goal.
Yeah.
And then because it's an away goal, we'll have to score
two. Yeah.
Two.
Yeah, no doubt.
Okay, New Zealand tomorrow is the last game of the World Cup qualifying as well. So New Zealand take on Peru. Now, let's take your calls. 9429 1116. Kenny's in Tarnit. He talks about nerves before a game. G'day, Ken.
Morning, guys. I guess the most nervous I've been before a game was the 2010 prelim. After what Geelong had done to Collingwood the year before, just as it built up for the whole week, I was just so nervous.
So they make you sick, those prelims, don't you? In some way, you think, look, we've qualified through, and that in other ways, you can see that grand final in touching distance. Yeah, I think about the Carlton-Richmond game of, what was it, 2014, you know, when, of course, Essendon had dropped out of the finals. Might have been 2013. And you think to yourself,
the ninth side can't come in and beat us.
There's no way they can win. You know, Chris Judd was banged up. There's no way they can win. 95, there's no way they can win. And then in that third quarter, they got going. And you thought, they still can't win. I think they won, Kevin.
Okay, so 2010 preliminary final for Ken is the most nervous he has been for a sporting event. David's in Boronia. G'day, Dave.
Good morning, KB, Ralphie. Two times for me, actually, is every time Collingwood runs out onto the ground, I'm incredibly nervous. And also, when the Dallas Cowboys play at AT&T Stadium, which is their home stadium, they can never seem to win for some unknown reason.
And maybe it's the sun that's just glaring in at them at about 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Silly question, David. Why are you interested in the Dallas Cowboys?
I've followed the Dallas Cowboys since the 70s, and I think it even went into when...
Yeah, but why?
Because just being America's team, they're a lot like Collingwood. They're very high profile. They have very high profile bosses in charge of the clubs, very community involved. And plus, back in the 80s, I loved the TV show Dallas.
Yeah, they're captivating, aren't they? You know, anything that Tony Romo used
Jerry
to do
Jones,
was captivating Jerry Jones,
their owner.
Who's trying to blow up Roger Goodell at the moment and his contract extension. They are just great to watch.
And there's talk that the other owners may vote him out.
Yeah, that's right.
And if they vote him out, it means he's got to sell the Dallas Cowboys. And we talked about it yesterday that it was with the basketball side, the NBA side, when the guy who owned it, you know, made the racist comments.
Yep.
And finally they sold it for $2 billion, I was told.
Roger
yesterday.
Sterling, was it? Or from the Clippers. Yeah, that's right.
$2 billion.
Yeah, every time Collingwood goes out, at least they have a crack, the Pies. At least they have a crack.
Heath's in Kensington. G'day, Heath.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Going great. Thanks for joining us.
No worries. As a Hawthorn member, we endured 3 prelims in a row, 12, 13 and 14, that were all very close. But I think it was 2013 was the most nervous because we were coming up against Geelong again and hadn't beaten them since 08. So we finally broke the curse that night. But walking to the game, my mate Jason and I just... felt sick knowing what was coming.
Yeah, you talk about 2 Hawthorn and Geelong games.
Not nice going to the game feeling sick.
No, which is why sport's so great. But you talk about those Geelong and Hawthorn games, and you talk about blokes who deliver. Jimmy Bartel, who always delivered, kicked that famous point that won him a game one day. Timmy Cahill.
Is he the Timmy Cahill of Geelong?
No doubt he is, yeah. And yet then again, Luke Hodge was the Timmy Cahill of Hawthorn in those games. Who are the players out there who, you know, like Brent Croswell, weren't interested in a quiet Saturday afternoon at Waverley, but give him a big crowd, give him stakes, give him something huge in terms of ramifications and they delivered. Who are the biggest big game performers out there too?
Well, for those who've followed cricket in the past when you've heard him speak, they talk about that with Keith Miller, that Keith Miller was a person, if there was nothing big on the line or where you're 300 runs in front, he'd go out and wave the bat and go out because it wasn't going to make any difference to the result. But if the result was on the line, he would go out and play as the champion he was.
Precious, make the big Messerschmidt up your ass.
Take the wickets, make the runs.
There you go.
Tell people that story.
So when you've been a fighter pilot, as he said, and people said, what about pressure? You must feel the pressure. And he said, pressure's a Messerschmidt up your ass. As someone trying to mow you down in combat. So he didn't feel the pressure, but I didn't realise that. A great big game performer as well.
Pete wants to talk about Indigenous people involved in other sports as well. G'day, Peter.
Yeah, you were mentioning earlier, fellas, about... the non-involvement of Indigenous people in soccer. The thing that absolutely mystifies me and knocks me for the six is that there are no Indigenous involvement in horse racing. Given that they are light-framed, they're just perfect to be jockeys and all sorts of people involved with horse racing. But there is none. And I am a big follower of racing right around Australia.
Frankie Reyes was an Indigenous jockey, wasn't he?
No, he wasn't, Kevin. He was Sri Lankan.
Sri Lankan, was he? Okay. In fact, people made that mistake, didn't they, with Daniel Kerr when he first started. I think Kevin Sheedy at one stage picked his best Indigenous side. Daniel Kerr until it was suggested that he was from Sri Lanka.
Archie Thompson's another that people talk about who is not Indigenous. So just think about...
So you can't think of anyone, Pete?
Maybe McCarthy, of course, in the early 50s, whatever, but he is the one and only.
He was a great jockey.
How about this one? Jack Graham, the biggest big game player. Not bad for your fifth game. Sean Burgoyne, Silk. How many extraordinary quarters
I've got a feeling, Pete, I know I'm going back a long, long way, but I think in about 1863, I think Peter St. Albans won the Melbourne Cup as a jockey. I think he was only about 14 years of age at the time, and I think he was an Indigenous boy.
There you go.
And no one actually knew his name, but because he lived in St. Albans, he was called St. Albans,
right,
Peter St. Albans. So I think that's the story that goes down when they talk about the history of the Melbourne Cup, that Peter St. Albans was an Indigenous boy who rode the winner of the Melbourne Cup. Take a quick break. We'll come back. The buzz is here. All thanks to Eco Garage Doors. And don't forget, if you need a garage door, well, and you need it fast, need it before Christmas, give Eco Garage Doors a call as they're able to turn their highly engineered European design insulated garage doors around within 7 days. 7 days. That's right, from measure to install. So what are you waiting for? Give Eco a call on 9703 1500. 9703 1500 and have one of their garage door specialists arrange a free measure and quote. Coming back, taking your calls, 9429 1116. What's on your mind in sport?
You know, I took it pretty personally, and you know, you've got to take that personally as a player, and I've got no doubt other guys read it as well. And I found it a little bit disrespectful. I mean, when one article, I suppose, referred to Ben Cunnington and Robbie Tarrant as nothing more than B-grade players, I think if I was one of them, I'd be taking that personally. I've got no doubt that a couple of guys feeling a little bit pissed off by it.
There was Jamie McMillan, just joined the boys on Brekkie today, and he's just signed another contract extension with North Melbourne. He said at 26 years of age, he's one of the older guys there, but just responding to Terry Wallace saying that they had the least amount of talent in their side, North Melbourne, and feels that was very, very disrespectful. They've taken it very personally, and he mentioned a couple of players there like Ben Cunnington as being, I'm not quite sure, I don't know whether Terry said they were big graders or someone else said they were big graders.
Yeah, I think Gary Bucanara might have talked about them being
big
graders.
Yeah, so I don't think that was Terry. I don't think that was Terry. I think he rates Ben Cunnington a lot higher than a B grader. Disrespectful, says Jamie McMillan, that Terry thinks they've got the least amount of talent. I think it's an opinion. I don't think it's disrespectful.
Here are the stats, Kevin. They won 8 games in their last 32 games. This is a side that was a very handy team, made a couple of prelims, and that's outstanding in the modern competition. And yet in the last, 13 months, they've lost Wells, Harvey, Del Santo, Petrie, Swallow, Hanson, Mullet, Thomas, Gibson. They're not all A-graders, but that is an enormous amount of talent to strip off your list. So, yeah, they're going to be a very a problematic team next year. Eventually, they'll get there. They've got a heap of salary cap space. They've got a lot of kids that we don't know if they're any good. But it's going to be a massive rebuild next year. And the best teams who have had lots of cash, like Hawthorn, Sydney, Geelong, have been able to rebuild by stealth. Whereas this team is going to have to bottom out. Might take another 2 or 3 years.
Ralphie has joined us all thanks to Eco Garage. So it seems like I was right in saying that Frankie Reyes was an Indigenous jockey. I know Sri Lankan was put up by a caller. There's a book out called Aboriginal Jockeys Over Time, and the book was released in 2013 by Professor John Maynard, the son of Merv Maynard, called Aboriginals and Sport of Kings, and tells the stories of Marv Maynard, Norm Rose, Frankie Reyes, Richard Lawrence, Darby McCarthy, and Lee Ann Goodwin. And a number of SMSs are coming through as well, saying that Frankie Reyes was not Sri Lankan. He had a Filipino father and an Aboriginal mother. He's Indigenous. Others were saying that Frankie Reyes' daughter, Shelley, was a Director for Reconciliation Australia, advocate for Aboriginal rights. A number of people, you know, agreeing with us that take a look at Cirioli. He's got the very Maradona-esque appearance. I bet he would have made a superb soccer player for the Socceroos. Just speaking on something, I want to play a bit of audio. I love this bit of audio. This is Brett Brown talking about Ben Simmons.
He's a difference maker. He is a game changer at a 6'10" point guard position. Some of his passes tonight, some of his finishes tonight, some of his loose balls and that are 50-50 balls, maybe it's his AFL background. He's different. And the thing that I like the most and get excited about the most is he has barely scratched the surface. He has so much more to give.
Yes, yes, yes.
On a world platform.
Brett Brown on the world platform. Someone at last has acknowledged that maybe
yes.
Ben Simmons is good at basketball because of his Australian rules football background.
That's fantastic.
Isn't
yeah, Kevin.
Great? Well done, Brett Brown.
Did you watch him against the Clippers, Kevin?
Fantastic. I tell you what, all his skills, all his weaving, all his passing, yes. All his peripheral vision. You know where it's come from?
Maybe yeah, it's his AFL background.
Playing for Beverly Hills. That's where it came from, out near Doncaster.
And you know what he did
won
too,
the best
Kevin?
And fairest.
He did, yeah. Could have been anything. Kevin, 7 dunks against the Clippers.
Maybe it's his AFL background.
He threw them down, the
long last.
Reverse dunks.
See, I've been the only one that...
Double-handed dunks.
I've been the only one for years saying it. That's a lot of rubbish about their basketball background. Every AFL commentator, you know, when they do something,
no,
you
know, I know.
They step sideways, or they pick Penderbury. Their nose, Woo. They go, wow, that's from his basketball background. I keep telling you, it's not from a basketball background.
Maybe it's his AFL background.
Thank you, Brett. Thank you, Brett.
I like that call, though. You know, you talk about the Indigenous players, the Maradona-esque, low center of gravity, lateral movement, lightning fast twitch muscles,
reflexes,
elusive, an 8th sense of the goal. You know, all those things would make them into perfect strikers.
Now, we've just been told Indigenous in soccer, all the kids play soccer in Darwin, as youngsters and love the game. In fact, Shannon Rioli, the Northern Thunder's captain in the NEAFL, is a very talented player. And that comes from a fanatic soccer fan. Now, Tony's on the road. G'day, Tony.
G'day, Kev. How are you, mate?
Good, Tony. Thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
Got some big-time players?
Yes, mate. A couple of your old nemesis played against you in the 80s. Bit of Timmy Cale about them in Wayne the Dominator Johnson and Wayne the Hurricane Harms.
Oh, talk about big moments in Harmsy in 79. So, I mean, they're pretty blessed, weren't they, to have Harmsy.
The ball was out, wasn't it?
Oh, I think it was, yes. Yeah. I watched them.
Isn't it one of the great talking points? And I'd like to ask the fans this. There's a lot of talking points in sport that will never, ever know the answer. Maybe one day someone will invent something where they'll be able to show the boundary line and they'll do some 3D or, you know, something.
Microchip in the ball, Kevin.
Something like that. No,
sensor.
But someone will be able to.
I see, righto.
We'll look at the vision and they'll.
Of the 79 one, yes.
And they'll
I
have
see.
Some electronic device or 3D or something like that or something out of Star Wars and they'll be able to pinpoint where the ball was and maybe, you know, at some stage we'll know whether the ball was in or out. But no one knows whether that ball was in or whether it was out.
So here's a couple, and I'm sure others will give us some others. Libba's point.
No one will ever know that.
Anthony Rocker's point.
Well, again, we need something from Star Wars. We've got to be able to track the ball.
What about? I want to find 15 different angles of Chris Grant, of course, suspended, lost the Brownlow medal. Sean McKernan, you know, the kneeing, the, you know, both of those. I want to see them from 15 different angles. Though I did see that A-League penalty with City the other day, the new, what do you call the video system? It was outstanding. Clear penalty, it was waved away, it went to the system, it was adjudicated in maybe 90 seconds. It was clearly a penalty, bang, they got the equaliser. So look, I haven't seen a million of those. I'm sure others would tell us who've been watching every A-League game. But I thought, gee, that worked well. So you don't want to lose an A-League game over a penalty that wasn't or was. Gee, I thought that worked well.
Good nicknames, aren't they? Yeah, Dominator. It's a good one. It's hard to go past Dominator, Wayne Johnson, and Hurricane Harms.
Hurricane Harms.
Hurricane Harms.
I like
I've never heard Wayne called Hurricane before. Dominator, of course, but I've never heard Hurricane. Robert is in Williamstown. G'day, Rob.
Hey, Kev. G'day, Ralph. How are you going?
Good, thank you. Thanks for joining us.
No worries. I believe, I want to talk about Indigenous soccer players. I believe Adam Goods was a really good junior soccer player. And even to the point where he came to a crossroads where which track he wanted to go down, whether it was AFL or soccer, and he decided AFL. So I can just imagine if he went the other way and we saw Adam Goods playing as a striker, say for the Socceroos, it would be unbelievable.
Well, he would be. He would be. And we've mentioned Sue Rioli before. I mean, we're just talking about the ability because what the round
threading
ball
through traffic.
That we've been talking about with the international games as well. I know Robert Di Castella in terms of, I mean, but I, in terms of running, he felt that, you know, for us to have a chance, you know, in, say, the marathon, he's had a group of Indigenous men and women for quite a few years now, you know, trying to tap into that potential, that ability to maybe run a marathon through Indigenous sports stars. So there's a lot of sports that probably haven't tapped into the talent of the Indigenous players.
Yep.
But I keep thinking I need people up north or someone who's been up north more times than me to tell me. But I would have thought that Australian rules football is their game of choice because of their heroes that have been passed down, you know, the great Australian rules footballers and, you know,
so you can give them all the soccer balls you want and say, have at it.
But have they
but if their hero is Cyril Rioli or all the guys who've come out of the Tiwi
Holly
Islands.
Farmer and Barry Cable.
Yeah.
And,
why would they not want to replicate that?
Andrew McLeod. That's
Look, someone off the SMS is just talking about Keith Miller and said he wasn't a fighter pilot. I just looked him up, Kevin. Can I just read you a couple of lines about how lucky he was and why there wasn't a lot of pressure? He flew Beauforts, Beaufighters and Mosquitoes. He had several near-death experiences. Mechanical problems forced him to make an emergency landing in his Beaufighter. The plane was repaired for use by others. On his next flight, the pilot, not him, was killed when the problem recurred. Another occasion, he avoided colliding and dying with a hangar by centimetres. He then escaped death by skipping a social engagement. A V1 bomb hit the venue and killed many of the patrons. So you can understand why he didn't really feel like the new ball or a couple of bouncers might have just been a pressurised experience when he'd escaped death at least three times.
Yes. Do you feel the pressure? That's when he actually said, well, pressure, that's when you're flying over the English Channel with a Messerschmitt up your ass. That's what he said.
Exactly.
So, when he died on seven occasions. Quick break, 9429116. We'll come back. We're taking your calls. The Buzz has joined us. He's got his famous buzzer beater and also crystal ball coming up as well. Johnson the leader! Yes! Dwayne Johnson!
Beat the buzzer. Ibekwe for the win. Pandemonium, the buzzer.
On Hungry for Sport, which magical moment caught your attention over the weekend? The buzzer's buzz beater.
Yes, the buzzer beater and the crystal ball, and it's 17 minutes to 10.
How buzz. Do you not give Elise Perry your buzzer beater? 200 not, as Kerry O'Keefe would say. There's been comparisons with Keith Miller as an all-rounder this week from Peter Laylor in The Australian. All I would say, though, is that Keith Miller played 55 test matches. She's played seven. I'll say it again, seven. In a decade. And so I would hope that the way that it captivated people, the 200 not out, the amazing caught and bowl catch, I think the takeout from that is that we want to see more test cricket. And so if, as she said, if in every series we played a couple of one days, a couple of 2020s and a test match, you know, we'd love to see at the end of her career her having played 30 or 40 test matches, and we could say, she is right up there with Keith Miller, because right now the sample size is just is inconsequential.
I thought Cam Bancroft might have been the buzzer beater.
He's handy. I tell you what, if you're going to have an audition, Kevin, for test spots, you've got to take the winner of the audition. He's got to be in, doesn't he? And especially
he's won Australia's Got Talent.
He has too. 76 not out and 86 against Stark, Cummings, Hazelwood, Lyon. I suppose the only question mark is, does he open? Which he's opened in every single Sheffield Shield innings he's played. Or do you slot him in at six, or does he keep? You probably couldn't open with him and keep, could he?
I don't think so. I think in his first test, he'll open. He'll just open. So it's up to whether it's Wade or Neville, I would think.
Yeah.
But he's 228 not out. But prior to that, his last, seven innings, he's had 206, 72, 18, 17, 76, 86. And then, of course, 228 not out.
Yeah, and you hear that he's got gears. That's what you've heard about in the last 24 hours. He's got gears.
So he's in now, isn't he? He's in.
If you've got gears, you've got to be in. No doubt he's got to be
in. He's in.
Yes.
You can't say go back and make runs, can you?
No, exactly. No, and then bugger off. Whereas I'm just not sure Renshaw's got gears. I mean, he's caught down leg side yesterday. Pretty stiff there. But, you know, as an opener, surely you've got to rotate the strike, especially when you've got such an explosive partner in Warner.
So at least Perry has beaten him for the buzzer beater.
He has. Now she has. Now the crystal ball, 2-1 tonight, Kevin. 2-1. I'm still feeling sick 45 minutes on. I think Cahill starts. Cahill gets us off to an early start with an early goal, and then I'll have that single chance. I don't know what it'll be, but we'll get that single chance. It'll be 1-1, and then with 7 minutes to go in the 83rd minute, Kevin, one of Rogic or Djuric will stand up, and we'll go 2-1 up, and then we'll just absorb for the last 7 minutes, and we'll be into the World Cup.
They had big trucks performing on ANZ Stadium they about did. 3 weeks ago. There might be big ruts.
There's
on
a reason
the pitch.
That ANZ Stadium is the worst ground in Australia.
Okay, so it's 2-1 tonight. That's the crystal ball, and the buzzer beater is Elise Perry. So you can tell us your buzzer beater and also your crystal ball as well. Justin's in Wandon. G'day, Justin.
Guys, how are you?
Justin, we're going great. Thanks for joining us.
We often hear people ring up and talk about how much it costs their kids to play soccer compared to playing AFL.
Yes, we do.
And you're wondering why there aren't as many Indigenous kids. Now, I'm making a slightly broad sweeping generalisation, but it is supported by facts. When you look at the socioeconomic ability of some Indigenous people compared to other people, and you wonder why, if it's costing $2,000 or $3,000 a year for some people to send their kids to play soccer, soccer can't even work itself out at a national level with the FFA, and the AFL's got pathways and all sorts of things set up that they've had for years, and they still struggle to get some Indigenous kids to come down here. That's why soccer's not getting as many Indigenous kids.
Well, surely there's scholarships, surely there are pathways. I mean, who knows? I mean, Soccer Australia can't get its own house into order, so, you know, we'll do some digging. I'll ask Dave Dudovic about the scholarships available there, because...
Well, Ian Robson's coming up, and it's a good point you've brought up, Justin. We'll ask him about that, about too costly, and it is too costly, because that is a fact, and I know if people out there have got kids playing soccer, give us a call and tell us what it costs, but it's to do with their coaches have to be accredited, and therefore they're generally, I think, the local clubs are aligned to a senior club, and it's all part of the cost of running the senior club, which comes through kids training, but paying to be coached by accredited coaches that go through the club, and as a result, it's not just not like me or my son-in-law going down and
You play Aussie for $80. It might cost you a couple of thousand.
But it might cost a couple of thousand dollars to actually be part of a junior competition. So, Justin, that's a good point that you make, and maybe that is one of the reasons why we haven't got as many Indigenous people as we would like playing the game of soccer.
So after Durek scores, then Rogic's going to score again. It'll give us 3-1, Kevin, so we don't have to go to extra time on the away goal rule.
Oh, well, of course, yeah. I mean, if they score, we have to score. So that'd be 1-1. Then they would win, of course, because it's an away goal. But we'd have to score 2-1. If we score 2-1...
I still feel sick, Kevin.
We win.
Yeah, it's got to be a long day, isn't it?
You're getting very, very nervous as we speak. Timmy's in Bundoora. G'day, Timmy. G'day, Tim.
Interesting about all the electronics they can use these days to pick up the Carlton Collingwood Wayne Harms thing.
Yes.
I know you guys have moved on, but for all the Collingwood supporters, 100% it was out. As a Tiger supporter, we've gone through 37 years. We're on top of it at the moment, so I'm happy to give it to the Collingwood supporters that it was out, and they lost another grand final. So.
You know what? But the point is, Tim, is that we'll never know whether it's out. I know you're having a bit of fun there, but it's one of those things that have happened in sport.
Yep.
And you mentioned a couple of others too, with Liberatore and Anthony Rocker as well, that we've talked about for maybe over 30 years in some of them, and we still don't know definitively whether it was in or whether it was out. That's what I'm saying. We'll need some 3D, some genius from Star Wars to track it all out one day on the TV screen and do a grid and say it was either in or it was out.
And for those of us who aren't Collingwood fans, it's absolutely brilliant that we don't know, because you might have won a grand final, Collingwood fans. You might have been robbed, but we'll never know, will we? It's just brilliant.
Well, we may know one day. We may know. Do people want to know? That's a question. Yes. 9-14, 9-11-16. Do you want to know whether Liberatore's kick was a goal, Rocker's kick was a goal, and whether Harms, when he hit the ball back into play to Kenny Sheldon, that was the ball out? Do you want to know that? We'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll take more of your calls. And Bobby from Jakarta is going to be the next cab off the rank.
Quick snap. Tony Liberatore celebrates a point. Well, what will he do when they get a goal?
Oh, I got it wrong. I was broadcasting that. He celebrated one of the great points, great celebration points there,
Joey.
Tony Liberatore. But it may have gone through. We'll find out when Star Wars hits in a couple of years' time.
Joey, timestamp this. 9:55. 15 seconds on November 15th, Kevin Bartlett was wrong. This is a historic moment, Kevin.
Play it again? Can we play it again? Was I wrong?
You can't.
Quick snap. Liber. Tony Liberatore celebrates a point. Well, what will he do?
You can't take back an apology, Kevin. You have officially apologised.
No, I wasn't wrong. I didn't say it was a goal. I said Tony Liberatore celebrates a point.
He was like the conductor there for the crowd behind the goals.
There you go. I thought we had you. I thought we had the first apology in your 50 years in football. I was wrong once. So I was wrong, though.
Off the SMS, it says we've got a kid playing soccer under 12, $1,600 for the year, $1,400 and $50 a week for private goalkeeping training. My other son's footy is under 11. We pay $130 for the year. So it is very expensive to play soccer. And we'll have a chat to Ian Robson about that as well. And maybe that's one of the reasons a previous caller suggests that maybe they don't have a lot of Indigenous boys playing soccer. Bobby's in Chicana. G'day, Bob.
Yeah, good morning, boys. How are you?
Good, Bobby.
Fantastic. I play football all my life and coach at a local level. And I've got a son who plays soccer. So I've got the advantage of sort of seeing both sides of the story. And with the soccer, it is expensive, but when you break it down, it's all relevant. The soccer season goes for, like, he's under 12, so he's still quite young, but soccer season goes for about 20 matches over the season. You've got pre-season tournaments, you've got post-season tournaments, and you've got pretty much training. He's at an elite academy, so that's equivalent to an NPL level, but they've got fantastic coaches from Spain who are professional. They train on fantastic surfaces such as synthetic surfaces. So when you break it down per hour over the 11 months that they train, it's actually quite reasonable.
What does it cost your son to be under 12s?
Well, it's about $1,600 for the year. There are some additional costs of travel and things like that when we do go to tournaments. But, about $1,600. But that's pretty much 11 months of the year. They train three nights a week, as I said, on great surfaces with professional coaches. So if you do some quick maths, KB, it works out quite relevant to a lot of other sports. Swimming lessons, private tennis lessons, things like that. If you look at it like that. With the one thing, the difference is though, there isn't any clear pathway at about under 14s or 16s. With AFL, you've got the TAC Cup. Starting a squad, starting sometimes under 15, a call to cannons and things like that. Where with soccer, I've got my oldest son. He's got some 14-year-old mates who have gone over to Spain, to Wales, to Italy, trying to find their way in the game and reach that next level. So from about under 14s onwards, I think soccer is dropping the ball, pardon the pun, by not having a clear pathway for these kids to go to the next level.
Well, maybe the AFL is the outrider, given all their junior, all their funding. My kids do swimming lessons. It cost me $450 per term to have two of them in there. So I suppose when you amortise that out, you're right. How do we get a better junior pathways, though? Or how do we push those Indigenous guys if they haven't got the funding? I'm sure there are scholarships available.
We'll find out from Ian Robson. That Martin's on the road. G'day, Martin.
G'day.
G'day, Martin. Thanks for joining us out there, dodging a bit of traffic.
Yes, I am. Now, we've got an event, Quadathlon, happening on Saturday, the 18th, and we're after competitors desperately to come up. There's a lovely lady, Brenda Norman, from the Deniliquin High School. She's also going to swim the English Channel, and she's raising money for mental health in rural Victoria. So we need a lot of support. Now, competitors can do individual events such as a 3.2K swim, a half marathon run, a 91.4K bike ride, and a 26K paddle up in local Yowonga.
Okay. So what's a contact number? This is a quadathon. It's on Saturday, November the 18th, you said. It's after competitors participate, Brenda Norman is raising money for mental health. 3.2K swim. I couldn't do that. I can't.
Sounds like
I can't go 3.2K swim. 91K bike ride and a couple of other events as well, and half marathon thrown in there, and there's the 28K paddle. What's the contact number there? How do people get involved, Martin?
All right. 0408.
Yep.
396-459.
Okay, well, if you want to have a crack at those events, there seems to be a number of events there, and for a good cause, give a call on 0408-396-459. Thanks, Martin. Thanks, Buzz.
See ya.
Speak soon. Coming up, Ian Robson.